Welcome to Resilience Rock Sales, your front row seat to rocking your sales game. I'm your host, Stacey Kopass. Today's episode is brought to you by the Academy of Resilience Inner Circle. For more information, head to academyofresilience.com.au. Now on with the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Resilience Rock Sales. Today, I am joined by Ben Jones. Ben, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Stacey. I'm so excited to be here and really keen to try and help in any way that I can deliver some value around sales and helping your audience as well.
Yeah, well, from the little conversation that we had before we hit the record button, I can see that there's so many angles and so much value that you're going to be able to bring to the audience for our listeners who are in sales leadership. And as I'm discovering week by week, each episode that I put out, there are so many more people that aren't in sales or sales leadership that are finding incredible value from the podcast. So there's lots of value that we're going to be able to get from our conversation today. Where I'd love to start, what was your earliest memory of sales, Ben?
My earliest memory of sales is probably, I grew up on a farm, right? So my parents were very much, business is not such a great idea. And the rule was you had to basically get an apprenticeship or a degree before you could leave home. And my dad was cool because he was like nothing in life is free. You have to go out and figure it out. And I think probably my earliest thing in sales was where I started growing some veggies and selling those on the side of the road, those sort of things. But probably like hardcore sales was a friend of my dad's. He had actually painted numbers on curbs of people's houses. You know, like the number that sits out the front on people's curves, you drive by, you see the number. And he said, oh yeah, I used to go door to door selling that. And I was like, oh, that can't be so hard. So I got some lino tiles, probably the age of like 13, 14, cut some number templates. And then on the school holidays, I'd go up to the city and I'd stay with my grandma. And I just used to go door to door asking people if I could spray their curbs with the number, right? So basically like paid graffiti as a teenager, which is kind of fun. And yeah, I used to do that. So I'd do that for like 2 or 3 days. I'd make a couple of $100 and that was enough for me to spend money on my holidays. And I think that was really, as a young person, a really important tool to learn that, you know, you really are just, you know, making a sale away from getting what you want, right? So basically all problems can be solved in business and life with a few more sales in most cases, right? Like it's not going to cure cancer, but it's going to help in most things that you do. So that was really cool. That was sort of my first learning lesson about sales. And I think I had a bit of positive feedback by it, but wasn't super encouraged to go down that line because as a young person, just with the mindset of my family and people around me, but it was definitely a skill that helped me later in life. And I think it's like anything, if you're willing to suck at it a little bit at the beginning, as long as you put the hours in, you'll actually get better and good at it.
That's cool. I actually still remember at my parents' place having people come door to door to actually sell that. And I liked the angle. It's like, oh, you know, so for an emergency services, you know, that it's easy to find and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So I really love that you've just connected that and also triggered that memory of having the door to door salespeople at my parents' place.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, it works well. I mean, it's actually something that we've had, like we help kids sell as well. But that's actually something that we've had other kids do as well. And I think teaching people how to do door to door, if you've never done it before, is great. I mean, you get a few people who are not so nice, but I'd say, you know, 80 or 90% of people are actually really nice humans. And it's a great way to actually test that out. So I really recommend, particularly for young people, door to door sales, because they're way nicer to young people. But it teaches you being okay with hearing no.
And of course, that's a super important part of selling and the resilience, isn't it? To be able to actually hear a no and not take it personally, not take it to heart, and then be able to sort of dust yourself off and go, okay, I'll go again. And how have you found, I was going to actually come to this later in the conversation, but I think we've got the perfect opening for it here. Talking about young people and selling, and obviously you've got youth in business, which I think is just such an incredible initiative because I've always felt really passionate about young people not taking the well-worn path of go to uni and get a safe job and do all those type of things. And it's something that I've encouraged in the young people around me over the years as well, is find ways to actually be in control or start something of their own. So it'd be really cool just to hear how that that came about. And also I'd love to hear, particularly because I know there's a lot of issues with young people and resilience today, how you're seeing that through what you're doing in youth in business.
Yeah, I mean, youth in business is really cool. We've been able to help kids do all sorts of great things in business. And I'll give the backstory on it. But basically, we've had kids through starting business, basically buy houses before they're 18, create 6- and 7-figure businesses, you know, be on every single media thing in Australia and overseas. And also, like, we've had award winners like Be The Change, National Young Achiever Awards, all sorts of different things. Probably the coolest thing is we had one of our clients write a book, How I Made More Money Than My Principal. And I got to write the forward, right? So like it did get quite a big mass movement prior to COVID when we were doing it on at scale. These days it's just all online and we just want to help as many kids as we can get. We're not doing the live event side of it. But yeah, really, really fun being able to watch kids do that. And it actually just started with our own son, and he was just like, wanted to have pocket money, and he was 7 at the time. And I was like, I'm not doing that. You know, like if you want to, and it was the same thing my dad told me. It was like, hey, like if you want something, you got to go get it, right? You got to earn it. And and having a farming background, I was like, well, why don't we, you know, grow some herbs in the backyard and you can package them up and you can go door to door and sell them. And he was a super sharp kid, man. Like he was just not the 7 or 8 year old that looked you in the eye and spoke, you know? So I was like, well, let's get you out there. So I thought door to door selling would be perfect for that. And part of that resilience, right? Like resilience for me is like, you've got to do something that is hard so you can learn the resilience behind it and gain the confidence to be able to do the next thing, right? Anyway, so we got him door-to-door selling. He did really well out of it. He was on a little subscription thing for a while. And, you know, old ladies would ring him up after school and he was making a couple $100 a week. And it was a whole thing, right? And then from there, we ended up on stage and turned it into a massive monster of just helping other kids. Because my wife and I had kind of got to a point in our lives where we were pretty comfortable, but we'd learn a lot of hard lessons becoming entrepreneurial, if that makes sense. And if we can help other young kids learn the entrepreneurial lessons before they have to join the rat race, it's much easier. And look, even if they don't become millionaires, but they know how to sell and they know how to basically become self-sufficient in their own right, doing what they want to do, they'll never have to work a day in their life. So I don't care if they're making craft to, and even if they want to go to uni and become a doctor or a dentist or whatever, but they know the skills of the business behind being a doctor or a dentist or a lawyer, they're just going to be way more set up in life. So this is our passion. I think we call it teaching kids the skill set of an entrepreneur because, I mean, if you take Elon Musk, Richard Branson, any of the big names out there, if they all went bankrupt tomorrow, how long would it be before they're a millionaire? Like a day, a week.
It wouldn't take long at all.
It's super quick, right? And the reason for that is because they have the ability to turn their ideas into money. And that is the skill set of an entrepreneur, and nothing happens without a sale. So I think for us, like that's the skill we want to teach young people today, empower them to live life on their terms. But the way we do it, and probably this is, and it lines up with sales perfectly, is forget all the stupid stuff that you learn in university about business, right? Like this whole take a year to make a business plan and you're profitable at the end. That's fantastic. And get an MBA taught to you by people who've never run a business. Like this is rubbish. The whole thing's rubbish. Anyway, I'll hop off my soapbox. But what we did with kids, which is really fun, is because they're the instant gratification generation, right? Like they need to make money. Like it has to work straight away. Like teenagers and young people today, they haven't got no patience for things that don't work at all. So we come up with a plan for them, which was basically sell it before you build it as a concept, or fly the plane before you build it. We call it sell it before you build it. And basically go out there and sell it. And if you can sell it, build a business around that thing, whatever it is, whether it's online, offline, in-person, service-based business. And what's really cool is that every single kid who does this makes sales in the first 7 days. And the way we do it is we gamify it because, let's be real, they're all into gaming and making games and, you know, tech kids learn things. So we do what's called a $20 challenge. So they start with $20 and then they have to turn that $20 into as much money as they can in a 30-day period. We create a leaderboard, we make it a bit of fun, and away we go. And when we first started it, kids were doing like, you know, $300 to $500, which is pretty cool, right? Like it's pretty amazing. And these days, most kids will do over $1,000.
Wow.
In their first month, which is really, I mean, to a kid, that's a lot of money, right?
It is.
And yeah, and then from there, you know, I think the record at the moment is like 5,300 or something mental. And these are kids who had no business experience, nothing at all. They've just gone out there, sold a few different, and we usually get them to sell a few different types of things, you know, and let their imaginations go crazy. And we've had everything from dog treats to popcorn to every service-based business you could imagine. And they all work because they've made sales on the front end. And what they quickly find is they're like, oh, I didn't like doing this thing, like the baking thing, but I really liked doing the pet sitting thing, for example. And it was way more profitable. Oh, well, look at that. But I think getting out there and trying and failing and being okay with that and trying the next thing is really cool. And being rewarded along the way, like they can then go buy that Nintendo Switch or that whatever it is that super motivates them within a very short period so that they're getting that reward for it as well. So I think selling it before you build it, putting yourself out there, gamifying it for kids is how we sort of did that. And then we built a whole program off the back end. Like, hey, well, here's how you grow a business and scale it and whatever else, right? But so that's kind of the youth in business, teaching kids to sell. And you know, just having a script, getting out there, being okay sucking until you make a sale or two, right?
Yeah, I think, and as you said, it's people are going to be way, way kinder to a kid than they are to a dude in a suit that's knocking at their door, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. And I think we say that kids have, I kind of joke about it, they have a golden ticket until they're 18, right? So like people will buy from them just because they're kids. And it's not only that, it's actually, they can get on media really easily as well. So if they've got an idea, they've got a website, getting on free press and media blows up their business massively. And it's a great way for them to learn how to speak, you know, to a massive audience and, you know, make a whole bunch of sales really, really quickly and see the problems that get created by making a whole bunch of sales really quickly and not being able to have the back end to deal with it. You know, like they learn so many really cool lessons really quickly. Because there's selling face-to-face and then there's, if you're being interviewed on media or something like that's a whole different way of selling, if that makes sense. So yeah, so you're hopefully learning as many skills as they can in a short period of time just to equip them for the future is kind of what we've built there.
Yeah, look, I love it. I think that they're, and again, all of those valuable skills, and particularly these days, because it's like, well, my boyfriend's got 5 kids between 5 and 20. And it's been interesting just seeing, you know, how different they are, particularly a 19-year-old girl. She has dinner with me once a week, always asking questions. She'll just go out and run with it. And the other is terrified of picking up the phone. And I'm seeing that that's such a common thing these days, is that the young people, I think, look, I know my preference was always to send an email or something anyway for a lot of the time, but there just seems to be this whole new level of terror involved when it comes to picking up the phone. And I guess sales in general, isn't it? Because there is that whole thing about, you know, what is it, the 10-pound phone and those type of things, like how difficult it is for people to actually then make that call. So being able to then get them into that place to be able to do that, I think is amazing. So what I'm curious about with that is, do you find that most of the time it's the parents that are obviously bringing the kids into the program, or are there kids that will then go, hey, mum and dad, I want to do this?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. So for example, you might have, for a younger kid, for example, say under 8 years old, they're going to need a bit more parent support than say a 16-year-old who says one word to their parents and is quite capable to conquer social media, right? So So I think it's a combination of both, and different kids. I mean, if your boyfriend's got 5 kids, you probably know like different kids have different levels of capabilities. We find what's really good for the ones who maybe don't want to get out there and do it. Like, obviously I would recommend every kid does door-to-door sales, like go bake something, go knock on your street. You're going to make $100 or $200 in a Saturday, you know, love life, move on. Right. And it's just a great skill for them to learn. I'll usually walk along the street with them, but they do the door knocking, and you practice the script before they go, right? So that they know what to say when the door opens, and you rehearse with them before they go. And so that I think is a skill every kid should learn, no matter what. And the thing is, if the kids want it, usually the kids want something. It's not necessarily they want a business. They want the new gadget or the thing or the whatever it is, right? And if you can motivate them to get the thing and they actually get it, that's what actually takes them to the next level. right? So they'll be willing to do the hard thing for a short amount of time, but it has to work, right? So whatever you do with your kids, like if you're going to do this, do the $20 challenge with them if you want, whatever you need to do, but get them to get a result quickly. And then get them to buy something or be rewarded quickly. So that's kind of the key. But in terms of motivating the kids to do it, what we also find is, let's say that you have five kids, or I've got four, for example. But if one kid goes out there and makes a bunch of money, even the other ones that think entrepreneurship's stupid, which is going to be probably half the other kids, right? So you probably have like one or two kids out of four that are pretty keen, and one that'll be like, yeah, I'm going to do it. What happens is when that one kid goes out and buys the thing and they come back and they've got their new whatever it is, the other kids are like, hey, hang on a second, what happened there? Or when you go out on the weekend and that particular child has money to buy whatever they want, wherever they go, the other kids are like, well, that's not fair. I'm smarter than that child. Surely I can do that. And then what we find is all of a sudden you've got it's a snowball effect and the whole family is now entrepreneurial. But it does take that one child to go out there and kill it. And then the others will all fall in line. So yeah, it's kind of funny how it works, but we've seen that happen over and over and over again. Like kids who come to our workshops are like, that's dumb, I'm never doing that. And then their sister does it and they're like, well, I'm smarter than her. And then all of a sudden, you know, they become the better entrepreneur sometimes. It's mental.
It's interesting because it's starting to tap into some of that healthy competition, isn't it? And considering that over the last, you know, two decades or so, that the element of competition has been removed so much, which is something that is just like life is competitive. Like it's been a crazy thing to do. So I like that it sort of taps into that and a little bit of that FOMO as well, isn't it?
Like the competition thing annoys the spam out of me in schools. I've just tried to take it out. Everyone's a winner, right? Like, and it's just absolute rubbish. And I speak about this when kids come to our events or whatever. I'm like, look, life, business is the ultimate competition. You know, like, you know, it's basically kill or be killed a lot of the times. And you want to get out there and dominate your competition. Like the marketplace, particularly in sales is probably one of the most competitive things that you'll do, particularly if you're on a sales team or whatever. And helping kids be okay with healthy competition, I think is the key. You know, give them a competition where they win in terms of sales, but they might not all win at the same level. Like one kid might do $2,000 and one does $500. They've still had a win, but they're like, oh man, I should have done X, Y, and Z, right? Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that one.
Yeah, I think it's great. So I'm definitely going to be looking for more information on this and sharing this one around, because I get so many people come to me and say, because I generally speak to adults and I speak to, you know, people who's in sales and leadership and stuff like that. And they're like, usually after an event, people come up and I would say, you know, at least 10% of the room will go, so how do I do this with my kids? So it's like, yeah, I love practical ways to be able to implement this and also foster that element of entrepreneurship, but also what I love about it is it creates such resourcefulness. And I think that that's something, again, that's really, really lacking, not just in kids, but in adults as well, is that element of looking at something or looking at something they want or something they feel like they lack, and then going, I know exactly how to get that. And that they know how, and they're willing to put themselves out there and they have the confidence to give it a go. And again, the resilience to go, well, if it doesn't work, that's fine. I'm fine and I've learned and I can keep moving and I can keep growing from that. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And to be honest, it's probably the most rewarding thing I've done in terms of business, which is really fun. But I think the world needs saving through entrepreneurship, right? And a lot of the adults are already, you know, they're gone. I had a really cool quote the other day come through. I think it was Benjamin Franklin that was like, a lot of people die when they're 25, but they don't get buried till they're 75, right? And I think there's so many people out there that just, you know, aren't willing to get out there and make that sales call, do the hard thing, right? Because they're so set in their ways. But youth today and young people, they're really the future, right? So the more entrepreneurs that we can create at a young age, or just teach them that entrepreneurial skill, that they're going to create things, they're going to make things, they're going to build the economy, they're going to hire people, you know, they're going to be the next leaders, which I think is so important. And the other thing, I mean, even if they don't do that, right? Even if they just learn how to turn $200 into a couple of $100 in a pinch, it literally can end homelessness and poverty and starvation and the whole thing, right? Just by teaching people to create and be of value and giving them the skills to be able to sell. So yes, very passionate about all of the above.
Which is awesome. And I love the big word that you shared in there is about value, because that's what sales ultimately is. It's around creating value, isn't it?
Yeah.
And gee, I'd love to hear your perspectives and your experience on that.
Yeah. So like, look, well, my definition of money, and there's a lot of different definitions, money versus currency versus whatever, but at the end of the day, it all comes down to an exchange of value. So whether you're bartering, you're swapping gold, you're swapping dollars or credit cards, whatever. If I have something valuable enough for you, you will buy it. Okay. So, and obviously the higher the value stack is, the easier the sale becomes and the easier that you can communicate the value that you provide, right? If you're not providing value, no one is going to give you money ever. So as salespeople, I feel it's our job or the job of salespeople to explain the value in a way that is ethical. And people are like, yes, I'm happy to exchange money to receive whatever the value is. And there's lots of different ways of doing that. But I think that's really the core role of sales is to explain value. And if you can do that properly, the value exchange will happen easily. That's really the core thing. And I think, you know, people think they get paid for their time, you know, and you might have this discussion with your staff. No one gets paid on time. People get paid on the value that they exchange. And I think if you can look at the world through this lens, is that a specialist gets paid more than a doctor. Why? Because the value they can provide in a short amount of time is way more with what's in their mind versus, say, someone who's not. For example, I have a high ticket marketing consulting client that I just went and saw the other day, and he likes to pay in cash. So I come home with a bunch of cash. And anyway, my kids have this thing where you can actually look at the notes of money. And if they start with AA, the serial number of that note is worth more than other notes. Anyway, so they then keep all these notes that have AAs. Anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But so I had some money just sitting on my desk upstairs and I hadn't put it away. My son comes up and he's like, what is that? And I was like, oh, that's from my meeting today. He's like, what, you got paid that much to just go and talk to someone? I'm like, yes. But I'm like, but the difference is what they've paid me there versus the value that they're going to get is different. So like, if they pay me this amount, then, you know, they're going to get this much more. And the funny thing is they pay me that every single month because I've made them multiple six or seven figures in a short amount of time. And I think my son at the time, he's 10. So, you know, and I'm like, this is the difference between what you have in your head and the value that you can provide, right? So, and I think that's, I mean, that's a very small just lesson that happened this week. But if we can think about, well, how much value can I exchange with you? If I could make you $1 million in a week, you'd more than happily give me $100,000, right? So, and that's the sort of value. I'm not saying that's an extreme example, but, we need to think about like the outcomes that we can get, particularly in service-based business and selling. Like you sell the out, people buy the outcome and the value that that's going to look for them. And you need to be able to deliver because your results are your report card in most industries. So yeah, value exchange, super important.
Yeah. I love that. The results are your report card. That's a bumper sticker, isn't it, on that one?
Yeah. It's kind of a fun one. I had a chat with a young agency, when I was just away speaking in the US, I had a chat with the young agency guys, like, oh, I've got all these clients and you know, they're a pain and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, he's telling me a sob story. I'm like, dude, can you get them a result? Oh, it's going to be difficult. I was like, fire them, give them their money back, move on. Yeah. I was like, life is so much easier if you just work with only people you can really help. Oh, but you know, they're happy for me to try. And I'm like, it's not worth it, man. Like your results are your report card. So if you can genuinely help people provide value to those people, they'll pay you more and they'll refer. It's not worth the drama. So I think a lot of times, just coming back to sales, sometimes it's easy to make the quick sale, but not the best sale.
Oh, look, I think it's a great one. Like I'd love to hear you dig deeper a bit on that, because I think there is that whole thing, isn't it, where people, and particularly where they might be under pressure to meet targets and things like that, that there could be that, you know, focusing on the short-term numbers rather than the long-term thing. So I'd love to hear your perspective and your experience on not going for those quick ones.
Yeah. So I think this is actually a concept that was taught to me early in the piece of some mentor slash business partners I had, Andrew and Dale Grant, really cool humans. Anyway, when we were selling from stage, and I've done a lot of selling from stage, so, you know, fill a room, sell a high ticket item and so on. What we always did and what we always do is we only let people apply. No one can buy on the day, right? And it's the same thing. Like if you come into any of my businesses and we're selling something that's of high value in terms of money exchange, we don't accept everyone. And that's a core difference, okay? Like if you don't accept everyone, you'll work with the people you want to work with, right? So usually at an event, sort of half the people who apply or less will usually end up working with. And it's so, and if you were given the option as a salesperson or as a business person, or, you know, as the CEO or whoever, whatever your role is, if you could only work with the people you wanted to work with, would your life be easier? And yeah, 100%, because one bad client is worth, you know, 10 good clients, and there's a massive strain on resources and all the different things that happen. And I think this was something that you learn at the beginning, particularly when you're selling high-tech consulting services, is you'll be like, oh yeah, we can make this, we can definitely help them. And everyone does. I don't care who you are. Like, I'm not perfect in this. I've had clients, and we've all had nightmare clients that we've taken just because we're like, oh yeah, that'll definitely help with cash flow or whatever. We'll just take a few extra clients. And then all of a sudden you're spending way much too much time dealing with these people. And there was a rule that I heard Mal Emery speak on this. And he was like, if you're lying in bed thinking about your client, or you wake up thinking about the problem client that you've got, it's time to fire them. And that was such good advice. I was like, and yeah, I hell love it. So we do that from time to time. But and no one's perfect, right? Sometimes you think they're the dream client, but they're not. But life is so much easier if you only work with people you can A, get results, and B, really help. So I think from an ethical standpoint, you'll get there. The way that you need to do that is you have to have a sales process and a lead gen system that allows you to do it. So if you're desperate for sales, you'll come across that way and you'll make less sales. Fact. If you play the longer game and, you know, you're willing to maybe eat peanut butter sandwiches for a while until you can actually get a few really cool clients and then refer and play the longer game, you will work out way better for you in the future. And that's just my experience with it anyway. But the short-term sale never ends well for anyone. Doesn't end well for the client, doesn't end well for your relationship. Certainly doesn't end well because you might have to refund or whatever, just the stress on your team and all the rest of it. So be value-based, long-term based selling is probably what I would say there. So
I really like that approach. And it's interesting because as soon as you mentioned Andrew and Darryl Grant, then my brain went, Mal Emery. And Mal's been a great mentor over the years as well. So it's there's lots of Mal things that he shares, isn't it, that stick with you.
Mal's amazing, sure. Man. Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, so Andrew Darryl Grant actually helped me create Youth in Business. It was called Kids Biz back in the day. So we actually came to one of their events and they were like, hey, we think you're really cool. Would you like to be on stage? And I was like, no. And they're like, come hang out with us in Thailand for a while. So they actually helped us build it. And then we bought it off them a little bit later, a bit of backstory. So
it just shows the value, doesn't it, of the long game, the relationships, the value and stuff like that. Because back in the day, Mal flew me over to Perth to speak on at business school in 2013 or something like that.
Wow. That's so cool.
It is. And I think that's the thing is I love this because, again, it's just that real, the long-term relationships. Obviously, you're going to have other clients that come and go throughout the period, but it says a lot about, as you said, your ethics and your clarity on what makes a good client, and then only accepting the clients that you know that you genuinely could, again, create an outcome for.
Yeah.
Then I think it's just such a good approach. And I'm sure that you didn't always have this approach.
I think I was lucky in terms of when I first got into like consulting selling from stage, Andrew and Darryl basically took us under their wing and showed us how to do it. Right. So, so that was kind of part of their model and I just adopted it onwards. And I think there's probably something in that. Whereas if you don't have the result that you want, like, I don't care what it is, it's YouTube ads, Youth in Business, whatever, right? YouTube, LinkedIn, whatever you want to do, find the person who has that result and either be of value to them so they help you in some way. So do a value exchange. It doesn't have to be money, believe it or not. And two, or go into business with them if you can. And but you have to be very good to be able to do that. Like you have to provide massive value. Again, it's all value exchange. And that's worked really well for us. Like someone who already knows how well, you want to do a lot of money to be able to do to learn the skill and then put that into your business. And it just shortcuts a lot of drama. So that's something that we've done over and over again. And we've just been quite blessed to sort of follow that sequence along the way, if that makes sense.
It does. And yeah, I really like that. And again, it's always good to learn from, they say, you learn from mentors rather than mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
And just, again, the investment in in mentors is just, I think it's one of the best investments anyone can make, isn't it? Really, when you find the right person and you invest in that relationship, then as I said, you fast forward 10, 20 years down the track, and a lot of the time those people are still in your world in some way.
Yeah. And I think, and look, you know, like you'll probably buy something that doesn't work amazing or whatever, right? Like that's going to happen too. So you might buy 3 or 5 things or something, and one or two of them aren't great, and maybe two of them are, right? But it's the same thing wherever you go. Like if you go to 10 different restaurants, not all of them are going to be amazing, right? So just bear that in mind, because a lot of people will be like, I bought this one thing, it cost me $5,000. I'm never doing that again, right? Like it's just really the wrong approach to that. And I had a call with someone about that the other day, and I was like, so the problem is you bought the wrong thing. You know, did that person actually have the result that you wanted, or were they just really good at selling, you know? So, and I think that's the key difference. And look, to be honest, the coaching consulting industry out there, there's a lot of people out there who genuinely probably trying to figure it out for themselves. So finding the people who actually have the runs on the board, that have the testimonials, that, you know, clients stay with them a long time, you know, they're the sort of things you want to be looking for when you're looking at an educational consulting product.
Yeah, good advice. And you mentioned their YouTube ads, and that's something that you're obviously well known for now. It's interesting because I guess YouTube ads, I think as soon as most of us hear YouTube ads, we're like, oh my gosh, that annoying one that just keeps coming up over and over again, and I can't wait to hit skip. And I really hate when there's two back to back, and I have to wait for the guy before I can watch what I want to watch, but I'm not going to spend $20 on YouTube Premium.
Pretty much.
Please tell. I'd love to hear the positive side of YouTube ads. I guess there's probably people out there that are in sales and they're just going, oh, YouTube ads are totally irrelevant to me. So I'd love to hear your perspective on who can YouTube ads help, and how can it not be that really annoying one that everyone's sick of seeing over and over again?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of parts to that. Like if you're in sales, for example, like the lifeblood of sales is leads. And this is why marketing and sales usually argue a lot. Like we bought these leads and they're rubbish, or the leads that are coming from Facebook lead forms at the moment suck. You know, usually, and then the sales team gets annoyed with the marketing team and so on and so forth. So I guess if you're going to pay for a lead, you might as well get the most qualified lead possible. And being in sales, you'll know the difference, right? Like if you call 10 people and 5 or 6 of them are really engaged versus one, how much time does that save you as a salesperson, right? So qualified leads are the key. So that would be the first thing. And if you have a look at the platforms that are out there at the moment, the most qualified your lead you're going to get at the moment is on YouTube, hands down. And the reason for that is Facebook's taken away all the targeting options, and it's all very generic and horrible. And if you're running ads on Facebook, you've probably found that the lead quality's dropped off and the price has gone through the roof. Fun fact, okay? The reason for that is because these ad platforms become saturated. 10 years ago, Facebook Place was the place to be. It had all the targeting. It had all the stuff, right? It was fantastic. But as more and more people get on there, I think over 90% of marketers at the moment are on using Facebook ads. There's just not a lot of room. Now, compare that with something like YouTube, where it's the same physical size in terms of daily users, but only 30% of the budget is being spent there, and most of it's corporate. And only 8% of businesses in the US are using YouTube ads. It's really is where Facebook ads was a decade ago, or search ads was, if you were old enough to remember back in the early 2000s, search ads were really cheap before they become really expensive. Okay. So it's the same, what we call adoption curve that's rolling through. Now with YouTube ads, on the annoying ads that you want to run, yes, they are the ones that pop up. You've got 5 seconds to skip. The difference is that if they skip, it costs you nothing. Now on Facebook, you're going to get charged for about 3 to 15 seconds. For a view, right? On YouTube, you get the first 30 seconds for free. So you literally...
Seconds is a long time, isn't it?
That is a very long time, okay? So if they skip, if they do anything or whatever, that first 30 seconds is free. Now you can say a lot in 30 seconds before people actually have to make a decision whether they want to keep watching the ad. And this is why the ad format's different on YouTube. YouTube is about helping people. So YouTube ad is about, again, providing value, helping people before they click. So that's really important. So if you're watching an ad and it's annoying, you haven't done your job correctly. You've tried to get a Facebook ad, it's working on Facebook, and put it on YouTube and everyone hates it. And then you run it for a couple of months and you get really, really frustrated that YouTube ads don't work and you leave. We see it all the time, okay? Instead, if you have a value-based ad on YouTube that actually helps people in some way, you'll find that A, you're not going to be annoying, and B, your ads are actually going to work properly. So there's a whole way of doing that, which is really important. I think the other one, while we're on YouTube ads, to have a look at is lead quality. So having good lead quality is key. And the way that you do that is we call it like a credit card out targeting system. So usually on Facebook, you might target a 35-year-old woman who likes chocolate, cats, and surfing, and probably wants to have a chocolate cat on a surfboard. You can do that. That's amazing, right? On YouTube, like that's next level. Maybe they've even got two kids, right? Now, and that's what people do when they come to YouTube. They use that same targeting. It's interest as a top level, right? But what they miss is the two most important things, which is income targeting and intent targeting. So if you can layer that by that 35-year-old woman that actually has enough money to buy the premium chocolate person in cats, how many times as a salesperson do you get on a call with a lead and you know that they just don't have the money to buy the thing that you want, right? Mm-hmm. It wastes everybody's time. Yes, you got a lead, but who cares? They're never going to buy from you because biggest sales objection, we just don't have the money right now, right? So if you can avoid that in a click, how much better would your marketing be? And then from there, we also want intent. How do we make sure that those people are actually searching for the thing that we want? Well, guess what? You can actually target people who are searching and target people who are intent-based and are looking for. So now you've got the targeting from search ads, but in a video ad, which is why the leads from YouTube are unparalleled anywhere else. And then if you take that one step further and the targeting options, I think there's like 4,723 targeting options that you can do in YouTube.
Wow.
Which is just mental. Like if you were to compare Facebook versus YouTube on the targeting, like one's Godzilla and one's Bambi, and literally Facebook is not the Bambi here, right? It's not the Godzilla, sorry. So the other cool thing that you can do is you can actually steal your competitors' traffic. So you can do all of that, make sure they have enough money, they're the right human, but you can go out to like your competitors' websites or your competitors' YouTube channels. Anyone visiting those websites, you can show them your ad, or anyone who is, searching certain phrases or on competitors' YouTube channels, they spent heaps of money putting it together, you can show them your ad. And so this is where some of the targeting on YouTube is really next level in terms of quality lead. They're usually cheaper than Facebook ads and they're way better. If you're running search ads, they're like half the price of search ads with exactly the same targeting in a video ad. So conversions are way higher. So I guess if you were to compare the two, a good way of putting it is that YouTube ads are kind of like the Goldilocks in the equation. They're not big and ridiculous like Facebook where there's no room in the bed anymore. And they're certainly not like search where it's all super intent and like mother bear style, but it's so expensive to get a click there. It's a video ad that sits literally in the middle. And it's literally where those other platforms were a decade or two ago. So you can be rewarded as an early adopter in YouTube ads.
Well, I had no idea. That's super interesting because I guess, look, yeah, I was doing Google ads back in the early 2000s as well. And and then it's probably been 10 years since I've run a Facebook ad. But now it's just, yeah, you've got me excited about the possibilities there. And I'm sure for our listeners, particularly as you said, leads are the lifeblood of any sales process. So would that be something then perhaps that you would recommend that say somebody was, say a rep in a company, would you then recommend that they then bring something up like that with their marketing team? To sort of go, hey, like I've just learned this. Is that something that you find is often well received, or are marketing often resistant to those kind of approaches?
Well, let's be real. Sales and marketing don't like each other 9 times out of 10. The way that I would overcome that, and this is what a lot of, if I was a salesperson, what I'd be asking the marketing people to do is run UTM tracking into our CRM. This is kind of a bit more advanced, right? So that way you can know as a salesperson where the leads are coming from. So for example, if you've got UTM tracking, if you don't know what that is, it's like it's a long tail link. Maybe you've clicked on an email and you see that the link's massive, right? When you go into your browser. So installing that on everything that your marketing department does, because as a salesperson, when you click on the lead before you ring them, you can see that, hey, look, this one came from YouTube, or this one came from Facebook, or this one came from LinkedIn, or this one came from social media or email list or wherever. And you can quickly see where that lead came from to opt in for the call or for the whatever you've got them doing. Okay. And then what you can have a look at is all, you know, and depending on your CRM, you can be like, well, the leads from YouTube, in our experience, close 3 times higher than everything else. Okay. So 3 times higher than Facebook and double on search. okay, which search is actually usually the highest in anyone's CRM, right? So, and the reason for that is because the journey before they get there. So if you've had a salesy ad and they opt in for your thing and then they've come to your sales process, that's Facebook. Or if they've typed in a keyword, but as they've done it in Google Ads, there's like four other people that they can click and they've opted in at four different things, then that's a problem. Whereas on YouTube, it's the same person searching, but in this case, they've watched one video just for them. And you've been able to help them before they become a lead, right? So that's why YouTube ads, you know, even if the lead cost is a little bit more, like even if it's double what Facebook is, but it closes three times higher, the actual lifetime value of that client is way better. So if I was a salesperson, I'd be looking at that because you get paid on sales and how much you're closing, right? And for you, it's a matter of time. How do I get them the best leads in? And it, you know, maybe it's LinkedIn that's working great for you guys or whatever your company strategy is. As a salesperson, I'd probably challenge you to like get that happening so you can see where the leads are coming from. So then you can go to marketing with actual data instead of just telling them that their lead's crap and saying, hey, look, the lead that you're getting from here, great, get me more of those, for example.
And I'm guessing with that too, then that would then help a salesperson who's been given all of these leads and they know exactly where they've come from, then to be able to prioritize their outreach to these leads as well.
Correct. And resources, right? So let's say that you've got 100 phone calls or 200 phone calls to make in a morning or an afternoon or a day or whatever it might be. But you can see that, oh, look, you know, 30 or 40 of them have come from YouTube, for example, and then search is the next best one from there. And then maybe LinkedIn and then maybe Facebook. It's kind of, I could just about guarantee that's how it's going to look. you can then go, okay, well, let's put the better leads at the top, spend my time and effort on those, because the biggest limiting factor any salesperson has is time, right? And where do they put their time? And it's competitive, right? Like they want to make its most amount of sales in the shortest amount of time and be on the leaderboard and ring the bell and all that stuff. So, you know, it's all about getting them the best quality leads so they can do the best job in the shortest amount of time, make the most money.
So from an energy perspective, because I guess that's the thing is too, is if you do that and you're reaching out to those higher quality leads first, you've got more probability of perhaps getting a win in those as well. And then of course, it's such a momentum thing as well, isn't it? It's like, if you can get a win, then it's good to get it. Even when you're going back to talking about the kids with businesses and stuff, you get those quick wins, then you get that, it's a little bit of that dopamine as well, isn't there? And there's that, okay, oh, cool, I'm going to go again. And so there's that motivation to keep moving through that process. Whereas if you get hit with all the no's, then it takes a lot more resilience and energy and all that sort of stuff to keep moving down, moving through that list.
Yeah. And this is where, like I said before, if you're going to pay for an ad, and you're going to pay for ads in general, you might as well get the most quality traffic that actually converts into sales, right? So just because you can get a $5 lead on a Facebook lead form, but you need 5 million of them to actually make a sale, is probably not as great as getting 3 leads on search or YouTube or something like that. It's intent based that one of those turns into a sale. That, you know, the marketing can say, oh, look, we're getting all these leads and we're so good because we're getting them so cheap. But if they don't convert, who freaking cares, right? And I think this is where sales and marketing fight it out. And this is, will come in to help resolve this a lot of times. And this is where like that UTM tracking, knowing where they come from, having a proper argument, if you're going to have one, around where the actual leads are coming from and turning into sales makes the biggest difference.
That's super helpful. And the thing that stood out for me in that is, I think it would be useful for our people who are in sales. Well, we've got a lot of people that are, you know, are business owners and stuff like that. Obviously they're in sales. A lot of people that have their own businesses, a lot of people who are coaches and speakers and those type of things like myself, like we're all selling and we're all marketing. I think the one that stood out to me there is to focus on the intent-based marketing to get those higher quality leads.
Correct. Yeah. Or intent and income-based. So they're the two big things that you want to do with YouTube, right? So one is the income. Yes, they have enough money to buy my high ticket thing or whatever it is that you're selling, right? And to do that, you want to target people in the top 30% of income owners. So it's usually the targeting option you're looking for. And then from there, you want to target people based on intent. So we find the best return on ad spend intent audiences are your competitors' websites. And you can do some pretty cool things, like cool stuff. Like let's say like we'll go after people who use big CRMs, but we won't target like HubSpot's login page, homepage. We'll target the login page. We're targeting the users of that site, for example, and then layering it out with keywords like looking for how YouTube ads or Facebook ads suck or whatever they're typing in, right? So that's where you can, and you know, who are in the top 30% of income earners. Like that's a qualified lead, right? So being able to like really dial in on an audience that is ready to buy, that is searching for the thing that you want and has enough money to buy the thing that you want and then becoming a lead, it's just a way better way of doing it. So intent and income targeting is what you're looking for there.
Wow. That's some absolute gold there. I know personally, I'm going to be making some notes on that one as well. So go and do that. And so I'd never even considered running YouTube ads, but you know, definitely curious there. It's also, I found quite interesting is when you go and Google yourself, it's always interesting to go and see who's running ads on your name as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, you can do stuff like that. So, but the nice thing is when you do it on YouTube, they don't know you're doing it.
That's cool. That's super cool.
Yeah. So when you do it on search, obviously you can see, right? But yeah.
But I also love the other thing that really stood out for me too in how you were able to really show the difference between these different ad platforms. And it makes perfect sense. It's like, well, first of all, when you go on search, you've got all the ads up the top, you've got all the other stuff as well. So you're competing with all of those things as well. And then Facebook, it's like, you know, the ads are in the feed. So they're, you know, people aren't even actually there looking for that specific thing anyway. Whereas on the YouTube, it's like that one ad is the only thing that's being served up in that at the moment. And you have to physically sit there, whether you like it or not, and before you can move on to your next thing. So I think when the way you've broken that down has been really, really helpful just to see how and why those leads are going to be so much more valuable than where, I guess, where people are typically doing the same thing they've been doing for the last 10, 20 years, perhaps.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly right. You just nailed it on the head, right? That, and the way we got into YouTube was exactly that same thing. Like we were running Facebook ads and they shut our accounts down as I was traveling overseas, you know, and, I mean, I'm going back probably 5, 6 years, I don't know, a while ago now. And it must be longer than that. Anyway, we were basically, you know, we were stuck because we were filling in a room. It was actually for Youth in Business. And we used to fill rooms to 700 people or more. So you can imagine that's a decent sized room, right? And when you're 3 weeks out and your main primary source is Facebook ads and they've shut it off and you're leaving for China tomorrow and there's no VPNs yet, like it's very difficult to figure that out. So we basically, I was like, well, the next best thing is Google Ads. So we hired a very expensive agency and gave them a whole bunch of budget. And me and my team, we had a similar size budget. And we were like, we'll let the best person win. And as it turned out, we did a better job than the high-end agency. So we quickly fired them. And we went from there. And then all of a sudden it was like, people were asking us how we were filling our rooms and how we were doing all these things. And that's where, and then we started doing Google Ads for about a year to teach people about Google Ads, and we found that 80% of all the results were coming from YouTube. So we just doubled down on helping people with YouTube ads. So, I mean, it's definitely all of these things happen in cycles, right? And in another 5 or 10 years, it might not be YouTube ads. TikTok might actually figure out their targeting and it might be that one. Or it might be LinkedIn ads actually drop their CPMs and their cost per lead. And, you know, maybe LinkedIn ads is the next new thing, but they're not there yet, if that makes sense. You're paying for traffic at the moment. That's where YouTube ads kind of sits. And all of these things are going to go through a cycle. And that's just marketing. If you've been around long enough, if you're enjoying the days of, you know, cost per click in Google ads back in the day or Facebook ads back in the day, that's literally where YouTube is today. So yeah, it's a pretty fun time to be playing there.
Yeah. And video content obviously is
video ads.
Where it's at, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah, gone are the days of static image ads. I mean, they still work. Don't get me wrong. Like, I know I'm going to get some kickback on that. But a well-crafted video ad is going to outperform image ad every day of the week. And it's the same reason. People would rather go to YouTube than read a blog post, right? So it's just the way that we're digesting content and ads at the moment.
Oh, well, this has been super valuable. There's so much in this. There's been from talking about young people and selling and motivation and then really starting to challenge people's perspectives on leads, getting those leads, assessing the leads, pushing back to marketing if they need to. Well, I think your advice there on was fantastic about for them to know what a quality lead is and their conversions on those, and then being able to go back to marketing and go, hey, more of this, less of this. This is where the results are coming. And just the, like your story about having your Facebook ad shut down because that's always the danger, isn't it? Where you've got one source of leads and everything like that, and you might be riding high on it, but at any moment, like if you've only got one source of anything, then it's a risk, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, the most dangerous number in business is one of anything, one client, one lead source, one insert, whatever you want here, right? So, and this is where YouTube ads are, whether you're running Facebook ads and YouTube ads, I suggest you run all of them, like run Facebook search. And I mean, the big three here are Facebook and Insta ads, which are the same platform, Google ads and search ads, Google and search. They're very different, but in the same platform. But run all three. Have a budget for all three, because at any moment, one thing could happen. All of a sudden, your search ads stop performing, or your Facebook is the one that's going to cause you all sorts of dramas. You know, like you can't scale, you get it to a certain point and you can't spend anymore. They ban your ads or they ban your accounts. Like, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, if that makes sense. And I think anyone who's run decent Facebook ad budgets for any length of time, like more than 6 months, is going to have lost an account, had ads banned or whatever. The really cool thing, last couple of years of running like high-end agency YouTube ads, we've never lost one account. We've had some ads like get paused, but the cool thing is you can get straight back to the people at Google Ads and they'll fix it and tell you what's wrong, which you don't get at Facebook. So it's just a whole nother platform. They're actually willing to help you, which you just do not get Facebook, right? So if you made the switch and you did nothing else but spend just a very small budget to just test out the platform, you won't regret it. It'll be one of the better things you did, and you can be cross-platform without having to worry about the big drama. You don't need big budgets. That's another thing. Like, you don't need big budgets to run YouTube ads. You can run, you know, if a lead costs you $50 to $100, if you just spend a couple of $100 figuring out the best way to get that lead, that's not the end of the universe, right? Anyway, that's my thoughts on that.
No, that's awesome advice there. And again, a big part of resilience is not just the personal resilience that we talk mostly about, but it is that resilience in the business itself. And as you said, having a few options there, and a lot of it looks like it's test it, measure it, iterate, evolve it, do all those type of things to ultimately then optimize how you're getting those best quality leads. So I really love that you've touched on that as well. And there's just one more part to the Resilience Rocks theme, and there's a musical twist to that.
Oh, wow.
And so with the Resilience Rock, I've got a playlist on Spotify called Resilience Rocks, filled with music to help shift your energy, your mood. It might be to get it up, might be able to chill it down. I think music is probably the best way to shift your energy and your state in 3 to 5 minutes or less. So I'd love to know, if you need to shift your energy in a short period of time, do you have a particular song that you would go to and play in order to do that?
Yeah, so I've got a bit of a playlist actually. That I've actually in Spotify called Energy. So I think that's a really cool thing. And it kind of depends. Like I use music differently. So I find like lo-fi, like house music beats with no words, like the alpha waves or gamma waves, some wave thing, that beta waves, is it? That works really well when I'm like, I got a few playlists on that, like when I just need to focus. That's really cool. But if I need to like just pick it up and get going, Energy list. I mean, I'm a kid of the 90s, so I'm going to show my age here. I just put it on repeat. So I've got, what have we got in here? You know, so I've got everything from Imagine Dragons to Twisted Sisters to POD all the way through to The Offspring and Eminem. So, you know, My Chemical Romance. What else have we got in here? Just lots of different things. There's some Metallica in there as well. So wide range. I'm not like niche specific, some Linkin Park. So kind of like all those turn of the century sort of rock rap things, like I get down to if I need to just pick it up. I mean, other than that, then I might listen to my two concentration ones, the focus lo-fi beats or like church hymns, because I go to church, but it'll be like no words. So just this background.
Yeah, because so, the words are just so distracting, aren't they? I've got one that I've called the work zone instrumental list as well.
Yeah. So I think it is very important. If you can get yourself some really cool noise cancelling headphones, they're the bomb. And noise cancelling headphones with earplugs, man, that's the GA. So it depends on what you're doing.
Yeah. I love it. Well, it sounds like from what you've shared off the energy playlist, it sounds like it's a very similar playlist to the Resilience Rocks playlist.
Spotify?
Yeah, Resilience Rocks, it's called. I'm a teenager of the 90s. similar era. And what I did even before we got on the call today is for half an hour beforehand, I popped that playlist on shuffle and just immersed in it. And it just got me in the zone. And what was cool, there was like three or four songs that came up that were songs that were contributed by previous guests on the podcast. So it was really cool to then pop it in my Instagram stories and tag a previous guest and say, this was James's contribution to the Resilience Rocks playlist. So it's a lot of fun. Music's such a personal thing. And I think there's an emotional connection with music as well. And I really love hearing how people share their experiences with music. So yeah, music is a resilience rock.
Done. I'm going to have got your playlist. So sick. I look forward to rocking it out. Thank you so much, Stacey.
If there's a song that you would like me to add to it, let me know. It's one of those things I really love doing at the end when I'm editing these podcasts is going into Spotify and adding that song. But yeah, it's been awesome. I have really enjoyed this conversation today. Again, when we started, we had no idea where it was going to go. And I love where it has gone. And there's been so much value here. I think there's been value for people in sales, people not in sales, parents. There's been so much in it. And again, I'm grateful for you coming and joining and rocking with us on Resilience Rocks Sales. And for anyone who would like to connect with you, have a conversation with you, and perhaps find out more about how they could get started with YouTube ads to, you know, improve their lead flow as well, and how would someone do that?
Yeah, cool. So if you just go to titanmarketer.com, so that's Titan Marketer, so titanmarketer.com, we actually have some cool giveaways and stuff. So I'd probably have a look at some of those. Like, we have how to build campaigns for stealing competitors' traffic, all of that stuff. We also do like a personalized strategy call. Again, what happens there is we just want to work out that YouTube ads are going to be profitable for you. So you run your business through a calculator to make sure it's all going to work. I'll give you some pointers to get started with YouTube ads. If you're already running some form of advertising and it's halfway profitable and you're not running YouTube ads, you're just leaving money on the table. So definitely check out, we've got some free resources and stuff. There's some free trainings and things. Check all that out. If you wanted to have a chat with me or one on the team, you can do that there. So you have a look at that. I mean, if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn or somewhere, Ben Jones is actually a hard searchable thing, but you will find me if you type in Ben Jones in like YouTube or YouTube ads or something. And then for youth in business, if you're thinking like that's something you want to check out, just go to youthinbusiness.com. There's again some free training there. Just get started with your kids. Just run a $20 challenge. There's some resources there, but anyone can just go and do that. So just make that a thing. That's pretty much where you connect with me. Like, my LinkedIn is probably a good one. But yeah, just go out there, have a play. Like, what if you want to get your kids started in business, go to a $20 challenge. If you want to get started with YouTube ads, just get started, right? So I guess that's probably the sign up I would give. But thank you so much for having me on the show. Stacey, it's been my honor to be able to hopefully share some insights with people. I appreciate everyone's time, because I know time is the big currency out there. For listening, hopefully they've been able to provide some value, and wish you all the best in your sales journey.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ben. And I will definitely pop all the links below anywhere where people are either watching or listening to this. And until I see you next time on the next episode of Resilience Rock Sales, be your best.
Thanks for joining us again this week on Resilience Rock Sales. Don't just listen though, take action. The best sales professionals are always learning. Head over to resiliencerocks.com now to go backstage and get the resources mentioned today to help rock your sales goals.